welcome everybody to our annual candlelight meeting. The candles always provide a sense of hope. This is our holiday event and a great way to gather during the holiday season. I'm going to ask that we go ahead and say the Serenity Prayer together. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I have asked Marian to read something. I've asked Marian to choose a reading that fits in with our theme. I put my hand in yours. So, Marian.
Hi, my name is Marian, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Marian.
And this is a reading from Voices of Recovery on April 17th. And it says, when we apply OA's Tradition 3, we find the treasure of friendship often where we least expect it, with people we once would have excluded from our lives. Such treasure is all around us, and all we have to do is open our hearts to receive it. And that's from the 12 and 12 of OA. After being in OA for a while, I look at who is in my life. The majority of my friends are those I met in these rooms, those who walk the path of recovery with me. When I think of my friends, sometimes I laugh. Most of them are not people who would have been my friends in the real world. We seem to have little in common. The Big Book tells me that we are like those rescued from a sinking ship. We have in common the peril of compulsive overeating and the common solution found in the 12 steps. That provides a bond different from any I have experienced before. Many of these people I would have rejected as being too good for me or not good enough. I'm grateful that I saw the treasure of friendship and that God opened my heart to receive it.
Thank you. And I've asked Arun to please lead us in reading the 12 steps.
My name is Arun. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Arun.
Step one. We admitted we were powerless
over food, that our lives had become unmanageable.
Two,
came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Three,
made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him.
Four,
made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves.
Five,
admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs.
Six,
we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character.
Seven,
humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings.
Eight,
made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
Nine,
made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
Ten,
continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it.
11.
Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out.
12.
Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
And Amy has asked, who did you ask to read Tradition 12?
Janelle.
My name is Janelle. I'm a compulsive reader food addict.
Hey, Janelle.
Tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thanks, Janelle.
Thanks, Janelle.
And I forgot to mention, I'm Virginia, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Virginia.
And tonight we are here to celebrate another OA event, an occasion to share in the power of our fellowship and thus strengthening our own recovery programs. And thanks so much for making the effort to come to this meeting. And tonight's theme is, I Put My Hand in Yours. And I had asked Mark M. about 6 weeks ago if he would put my hand in yours to music. So he used his creativity and he's done that. And Mark and Ace are going to sing a couple of times, I Put My Hand in Yours. So so you may.
Now?
Yeah.
My hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams.
Speakers tonight, which I'm really thrilled. Our first speaker is Margie or Margie. And Margie or Margie has let me call her by either name because I always get mixed up what her name is. Mm-hmm. So I call her Margie or Margie. And every Monday night meeting, I will call her by, I don't know, whatever, either one of those names. And so she's been in OA a long, long time. Yeah. And I've known her a long, long time. And her story is very interesting, and all three speakers have an interesting story to share. So, Margie.
Hello, everybody. I'm Margie. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. Through the grace of God and the fellowship of the OA program. I'd like to share for today's reading. Today's December 12th. Our chief want in life is someone who shall make us do what we can. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Only one person can make me do what I am capable of doing. Myself. But I need as much support as I can get from friends, sponsors, and every single one of the OA members who go to meetings week after week. It is important to be clear in my mind that other people have only their love and support to give to inspire me to work the program and to achieve abstinence. They cannot do these things on my behalf. The strongest and most dependable support I have is my higher power, which is there for me at all times and whose will for me is to do the best I can. For today, I am putting my God-given abilities to more and better use in this program, thanks to the presence of God in my life and of my fellow OAers who are following the same path. I came into these rooms in November of 99, and I came here to lose a few pounds. I had no idea this was a spiritual program. If I did, I would never have come. But I'm so grateful. It's funny how things turn out the way they do. My first meeting, as I was coming, I came with a friend. It took me many months to get the courage to come, and a friend said, well, let's just go, and we did. And as we were driving down, I said to her, I wonder if they're serving snacks. They didn't. But that was my motto in everything I ever did. It was, what is going to be served? What are we going to eat? Whether it was a PTA meeting or a gathering, a Tupperware party or whatever, that my focus was on what was going to be served and what was I going to get to eat. Every wedding was consumed. Every holiday was around the food. I came into these rooms weighing over 200 pounds. I stayed because not of over 50-pound weight loss for 11 years, but for the sanity that I had for the first time in my life. For the first time in my life, I was able to go to events and enjoy events and people and friends and family without being consumed with what was going to be served in the food categories. I owe my life and my soul to the OA program, and I never thought about leaving, and I very rarely miss meetings because there's no other solution, because I've tried other solutions. And as we've heard many, many times over and over, this program is like a three-stooled chair. And you have to work all three of those little legs in order to have recovery. Because if you just work on one, the stool collapses. This disease is very cunning, powerful, very sneaky. And the more you spend in these rooms being abstinent, that disease is right out the window, right out the door, waiting for you to slip up. So, anyway, I've come to really enjoy the people in OA. In the beginning, it's like, oh my gosh, these people have so many problems. And then I realized they were speaking my story. And it wasn't until I started dwelling within myself and to see what my side of the story was. I really kind of thought this was a kind of more of a therapy session, and I was going to get to talk about, you know, the kids, how ornery they are, the husband who's really ornery, and the boss who doesn't appreciate you, and all the wrongs that the world has created. And I just realized that I really wanted people to play a part, and I felt that the world would be at peace if everybody played their part the way I thought they should. I still do sometimes. I really see now that I have a part in everything as well as everybody else. I can take anybody's inventory. If you ever have any trouble, give me a call. I can do your fourth step. But it's really difficult to do my own and to see where my failures and faults and shortcomings lie. But what a blessing it is to actually acknowledge them and see them and start to heal from them. And it has just made such a world of difference, because now I don't have thoughts of, I wish I were dead. I'm fat, I'm ugly, I'm stupid. I don't have to think about these things like this constantly. Instead, it's what can I do to be of service to others? How can I be a support to other people? I love what I do. God has blessed me every single day. And I really, when I come to my meetings and I hear other people talk, it's like I can grab something from something somebody says. Even though I've been coming every week for many years, it's still new. It's still new and fresh, and I feel, and I hope that I can always help somebody else also on their journey, because this is a journey. I think in the beginning of my life, I just wanted to get through it and be done with it, and now it's sit back and enjoy without the anxieties in it. And the cares and the worries that I just fretted over, the things I fretted over that never even came to surface, but it was part of my personality to really think the total negative. It's really hard for me sometimes not to, still. But anyway, I'm just really thankful that we have this program together and we can all share together and take our each other's hands and be a support. We can't cure another person. We can't do anything for another person. You all can't do anything for me. But just being, we do. We strive. We come to a greater plane, a greater sense of understanding, a greater sense of hope, a peace that I never had before. And I just, it's called life. And now I feel like I'm living life. And I'm just very grateful about that. When people ask, well, how do you do it? How do you do it? Well, I just say, just work the steps. Just work the steps and let go. And the more you surrender to your greater, higher power, the more it just kind of falls into place. And it isn't anything I do, or when I quit trying to control myself or others and just let my higher power be within me and dwell within me, things just fall into where they need to be. And it gives me an inner peace, and I just can't ask for anything more than that in my life. To me, that's just a great accomplishment. So thank you all for letting me speak tonight, and thank you for coming and sharing your journey and your stories with us, and thank you, Virginia, for putting this evening together.
Thanks, Margie.
Well, we'll open it now for sharing for about the next 15 minutes. So it's open sharing. And if you would, because we have a huge group, if you would limit your sharing to 3 minutes so as many people can share as possible, thank you.
I am Nadia, I'm bulimic.
I am Nadia. And I had an accident tonight coming here, and so I'm like, I can't believe this. And I had to call my sponsor and tell her, no, car is still drivable, so I'm coming. But I think it would have been the end of the world before I had an accident and I was still in the food. I think it would have been like, this is it. I might as well die tomorrow. But it wasn't like that today. You know, and it's like, okay, well, it's just an accident. It just happens. Thank God the car is still drivable. And I only have liability, so my car is not being repaired because I'm at fault, and his car is being repaired. And on top of everything else, I got a ticket. I'm like, okay, but the blessing is that the car is drivable. The blessing is that the ticket is only 1 point. And so... got to take responsibility. I mean, it was my fault, really. I tried to say it wasn't. I thought about not saying it wasn't. And then I thought, well, can't be your fault. You can't just say it's not. But I had to call a friend and say, is it really my fault? He said, yes, it is. So anyway, but if it was any other day, boy, I tell you. So here I am. And you know, it's funny because it really doesn't bother me. Deep down inside, it doesn't bother me. And that's amazing, because every little thing bothers me. You know, I mean, I'll carry that stuff and you know, go with that stuff and, you know, until, oh, it's so miserable. Poor me. So here I am at the meeting with a messed up car, but it's been drivable. So, thanks.
Thanks.
I'm Janelle. I'm a compulsive reader, food addict.
Hi, Janelle.
I'm having a belly button birthday tomorrow. Mm-hmm. One of those ones with a big fat zero at the end of it. And I thought there probably wasn't a better place for me to be than at a meeting tonight. And, you know, I'm reminded of this journey that started for me. I have been in a 12-step program for over half my life. And as a result of that, as a result of having, you know, I've had ups and downs, I've had relapses, but the fundamental way I've lived my life is the journey that started 32 years ago. And that's by the 12 steps, with a higher power, doing the best I can with the addictions and issues that I have. So the result of that is I look back on it and I think, wow, you know, I have a very different life than I would have had I not found the 12-step program. I have a very different family life. I have a very different reality. And that would never happen if I hadn't had the willingness to just keep showing up. Whether it was easy or hard, whether I liked it or not, whether I liked, yeah, I've lived in places where there was no OA. You know, I came into OA first, but I have had three major relocations in the fellowship, and two of them were to places where there was no OA. And that was a very bleak way. That was very bleak and very difficult. But I, you know, I go to other 12-step programs and tried to apply the principles through across my life in all ways. So I'm just feeling a lot of gratitude. I'm feeling a lot of gratitude that that my life is full and rich. And, you know, I've not ever worked a perfect program. I've had lots of ups and downs, but the fundamental basis of I like to share, and those of you that know me have heard this in meetings before, it was like I was handed this manual on how to live my life that was missing a lot of chapters. And it was only when I found the 12-step program that I found the chapters that were missing. And as a result, my life has been much richer, much warmer, full of friendships, and beyond my wildest dreams. So thanks. It's really a privilege to be here tonight.
Thanks. I'm Marcia. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Marcia.
I'm very grateful to be here. I've been without meetings for 2 weeks, and so I was so excited to come. I listened to about half the tapes from the state convention today. I hadn't gotten to listen to those, and it was wonderful. Having been without meetings for 2 weeks, I was just like soaking it up and going, oh my gosh, yes. I was with great people, but none of them in program. And people not in program were not people in program. And so I am thrilled to be surrounded by people in program. And Margie, thank you so much for your story. I wish I had gotten here for the whole thing, but I'm glad Tom's taking it. And I'll look forward to hearing the rest of it. And glad there's so many people here. It's really neat to see. Thanks.
Thanks,
Amy, compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Very grateful to be here. Thank you so much for that beautiful music. Just really, the sound in this room was great, and thank you for your story as well. And I'm really grateful today too. I on the drive over here, I'm celebrating. A recovery birthday today, and it's my OA what it's kind of my official surrender birthday. And so on the drive over, I was thinking it was would have been, so I'm starting my 33rd year in program, and I was in London, very lost, out of college. I had bottomed out in every city until I arrived in London, and I, December 12th, 1979, I always worked in restaurants so that I could get free food, and I had eaten my way till midnight, and I stumbled back to my little flat and just stole food from the old lady I was staying with. It was just awful, awful. And I got a can of evaporated liquid, and I went to this bridge, and I was under the bridge shaking, trying to open up this can and drinking it like a drunk under the bridge by the River Thames. And I just, something hit inside of me. I found a way, and I was trying to do it on my own and doing it the best I could, but I had not gotten that surrender piece. And something shifted that night, and I just thought, you know what? There has got to be a power greater than me, or I better just jump in the river. And that was kind of, I was at that crossroad, you know, and instead of jumping in the river, I went back and just prayed all night. And took a third step, and you know, I too don't have a perfect program, but this is my way of life. You know, it's led me to other programs and other layers of understanding about who I am and what this addiction was about for me. And I just I actually asked Amy if she could give me my chip. I'm ordering a chip because they don't have it, but Amy's gonna give me.
Now?
I guess.
I don't know.
I'm Amy Foodatic Gleemick. Hi, and it's an honor, Amy, because we have shared the drink. Amy doesn't remember this, but I asked her to be my first sponsor, and she did this kind of sign to me. And that was back then, because that's how sick I was, you know, and there weren't a lot of Gleemicks back then, and so. Over the years, it's been a beautiful thing watching us go back and forth and who's the other Amy, you know, in the conversation, and a real inspiration. So it is an honor, honey.
I've asked Mandy to share, and you have 15 or 20 minutes, and I met Mandy 10 years ago, and you still are a kid. You still don't have it. She hasn't aged in 10 years. So take it away, Mandy.
Give you a break. Sure. Hi, I'm Mandy. I'm a food addict and exercise addict. Hey, good to be here. And I must say, this is my first OA meeting with a lava lamp, so it's a big night. pretty cool OA meeting. But I just briefly want to talk about, I'm just going to read the Roseanne's Prayer again. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. So I've never spoken specifically on this prayer, but I wanted to, in reading it and talking about it, kind of break it down a little bit for you guys. So in reading it, I think it helped me see in some ways how the big book becomes manifest and how what we read in our literature is really inherent in this prayer. So the first part when it talks about, that no longer is there a sense of hopelessness. You want to hold this?
Yes.
Okay. I want to talk about the hopelessness that we feel, that we no longer have to feel. In the Forge of the First Edition, it says, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book." And that gives me hope because it talks about how we have recovered. You know, we hear debates about, are we in recovery? Are we recovered? But here it says we have recovered. not that we're cured, not that we get to go eat whatever we want and be okay and not have the consequences, but when it's talking about the state of mind and body that is hopeless, we are no longer in that position. Like, today I have a day of the reprieve. I'm sober today. I'm abstinent today. I'm not worried today about if I'm going to binge or not, but if I'm going to go to sleep with a food coma or not, if I'm going to wake up hating myself or not. Like, there's none of that. And that gives me hope, and I hope that gives you hope, that we never, ever have to compulsively overeat again. And then also when it was talking about, no longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. So I wanted to read this. And this is in the second chapter, There is a Solution. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. So I think there's a lot of us in this room that we're pretty strong-willed. You know, if we set our mind to something, get out of our way. Like, watch out. But when it comes to food, like, that is where I'm broken. That is where I'm weak. I cannot stop. Like, if it's crumb versus me, the crumb wins. I can't, you know, and I'm coming from, like, weighing 50 or 60 pounds heavier than I currently do. I thought I was genetically engineered to be fat. I thought there are fat people and there are thin people. I'm one of the fat ones. Sucks for me. Get over it, you know. That's really what I thought, and which is pretty ludicrous now to look back, because I don't think we're dumb people, but I don't know why I didn't connect that I was eating a lot and that's why I was overweight. But for me, like, I didn't make that connection. I really just thought, is it my thyroid, you know? Please let it be my thyroid, because my willpower is broken, and so I can't fix it myself. I need you guys. I need the steps. I need a power greater than myself. Because then it says later, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. And that's critical. And that's why I need you guys, and that's why I need the steps, because I need to be unblocked from that higher power. If the problem is in my mind and my will is broken in that area, I need something outside of me to help, and that's why I need the whole program. And then it talks about, we're all together now reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours, and as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. So I wanted to walk through, I can take that now, thanks. Thank you. How the fellowship is critical to working the tools, working the steps, with one caveat that... when people first sobered up in AA, they did the directions in the book, and it worked. You know, the first 100, like, they sobered up and they stayed sober following, and then they wrote it down so that people wouldn't mess it up, essentially. But over time, they found that there's also a power in the fellowship, that people can come to meetings and come around long enough and maybe not work the steps and get enough power just in the fellowship to stay sober for a while. But the problem is people started doing things differently, and I mean, people do things differently, so I don't want to knock that. But my point is, if we're not doing the deep down spiritual work that needs to be done, we can get something out of the fellowship, but it might not be everything we need, and it might not last, and it might not be that permanent recovery that we need to have that psychic change and that spiritual awakening. Just to keep that in mind, that I wanted to walk through the tools and the steps and how the fellowship and putting my hand in yours, so to speak, is so critical in order to recover. Partly because this is a disease of isolation that wants us dead. You know, essentially, that's what I have come to realize, is this is a disease of self-destruction. That might not be what the newcomer first wants to hear or hears when they come into the door, because maybe they're just here to lose a little weight and good enough. But for me, I'm an addict. I'm a hardcore addict. And I have a disease and a dark place inside of me that I go if I don't have this fellowship and don't have you guys in the steps. So in terms of the tools, it starts with the plan of eating. I wasn't able to get sober until I got a sponsor to help me, until somebody told me what to do. So some people don't need that. Some people can do it on their own. Some people can find a structure that works for them. But for me, I was binging until somebody said, I will sponsor you. And I said, all right, you know, I'll take your help. And not because I wanted to really, but because I didn't know what else to do. So I think it's critical, whatever your plan of eating is, like, just don't do it alone. don't try to figure it out yourself, you know, because that's what got you here. So if that worked, why were you here? You know, so get some help. And then also the accountability that having a sponsor has with the plan of eating is critical too, because if you have a mind like me, I can start to cut corners and water things down and justify and rationalize until I'm back in the food, and it doesn't work. But then also then the second tool being sponsorship, that the sponsor's not just there to help me with my food then, but she's there to help me with my life. You know, that I don't want a non-sponsored life anymore. I don't want to just get to do whatever I want, because that led to misery and a lot of selfishness. So now really to be accountable is such freedom, and to have somebody I can tell things to have somebody who can be there for me in dark times, like in death in the family, or in good times, like, you know, just different exciting life events. But for me, it's critical to have a sponsor, and also to be a sponsor that, I mean, the Big Book emphasizes over and over again that I have to constantly be thinking about other people and trying to be of service and doing for others, because I am so self-centered. And with God's help, I can be free from that one day at a time. But it's so critical to give it away. I mean, it talks about when life, it works for rough times and in tough spots and in the trials and the low spots, we have to help others. And that looks different for each person. I think each person kind of has their own gifts about what they can do to be of service. Some people might be more interested in relationships. Some people have a gift of music. Some people have a gift for service, for kind of the details of organizing things. But we all have what we're gifted with. And then meetings, of course, that we need each other. We need, like, thank God that we have a place to go to, that whatever you're walking through right now, at least you're here. You know, that's huge. That's huge. And then telephone to connect with people. Kind of the community of recovery that I come from, they're hardcore into the phone, making phone calls and talking. And I think that helps develop a place to go so that you're in the habit of reaching out instead of picking up the food. Because if I just wait until I'm on the edge, or I just wait till I'm really desperate to make a phone call, then I'm too close already. So to stay more in the center and to work those phone calls and to put it first in my day, that if it's a busy day, all the more important to get it done early. I heard somebody say one time that, like, take a half hour quiet time each day, unless you're really busy, then take an hour. And, you know, kind of same thing. Like, when I start going to the place of, oh, my life is getting too busy and full to do my program, it's like, whoa, where did that come from? You know, don't let the gifts of the program take away the gifts of the program, and put first things first. So we got plan of meeting, sponsorship, meetings, telephone, writing. I think some of these things are very personal tools. Like, writing might be a very personal tool, but when I read to somebody what I wrote, when I have that, I can take a step back and personalize something and just be honest with myself when I'm alone. But then that helps enable me when I go to somebody to tell them the truth, even though I might be scared to say it, even though it might not be something I want to admit. For example, with the step work, if I need to talk about a resentment I have, or a hard thing that happened, or a pain in my life, or with the amends, to read it over with somebody, it just puts it in black and white and gets it in and out of me. I think there's something even to be said for muscle memory, like physically getting it on paper, and it has a beginning and an end, and then moving on. And then literature, I mean, when we read it together, it does something different. And anonymity, of course, not to gossip or drag anybody's name through the mud, so that we can have some integrity in our fellowship. An action plan, that as well is, I mean, if you have an action plan that's just for yourself, that for me is not that helpful, because I can give myself all kinds of motivations and goals that never really happen unless I say, okay, I am going to do this to somebody out loud. And then service, obviously service is a whole crux, you know, the whole thing leads up to step 12 of service, that when I get right with God and get right with myself and get right with my fellows, the purposes of having had a spiritual awakening, that I'm there then more able to help other addicts and practice these principles in all my affairs. Cause I like to say, when I die, I don't want the story of my life to be like, she ate a lot of good food and watched a lot of TV. You know what I mean? Like, that's a sad, sad story. But I think about that, because I think about my free time. Like, how am I spending my free time? How many, like, Christmas cheesy movies have I watched, you know? But rather, instead, what am I going to do with the dash? You know, meaning people say, like, the year I was born, dash, the year I die, what am I going to do with my dash? You know, how am I going to spend my time? And the only thing really that seems to me a value that lasts a long time is, have I helped people? You know, did I ease somebody's breath a little bit today? You know, did I, was there joy brought into the day because of me, or did I try to suck things out of it? And I got to be honest, a lot of times I'm like, wow, I was so selfish today. Man, you know, God forgive me, and what corrective measures should be taken, not to be morbid and self, like, beat ourselves up, but really to say, okay, like, God, help me just do what you want me to do. You know, I'm broken. I surrender, whatever. Like, you take over and use me. So those are the tools. But then talking about the steps, you know, that really, thank God for the fellowship. Thank God that there was Bill and Dr. Bob, and that they came together, and that's when things started rolling, you know, and that when things were tough, when Bill was having a tough day, thank God that he didn't pick up the drink, but instead, like, went to the phone, made a phone call, and found somebody else who he could help. And if he hadn't done that, I don't know if I'd be here. Because can you guys imagine if we didn't have someplace to go to tonight, or a fellowship? And even if you're struggling in the food, even if you're having a tough time, even if you're on the brink of giving up, or you're in it, you're, like, headlong in it, and you're like, I'm such a phony at this OA meeting. Like, you know, I don't know how you felt, but I felt in the beginning, I was still binging and going to meetings in the beginning, thinking, you know, just feeling like I had to get everything perfect and then I could go to a meeting. Yeah, right. You're like, who am I kidding? I'm going to a 12-step meeting and thinking that, oh, they don't know I have an issue, you know? I'm at a 12-step meeting. They know I have an issue, you know? So thank God for the fellowship that, but with the first step, really, that I think is the one area where nobody can do it for you. Like, that's the area you got to have the conviction. And there might even be people in your life telling you, you're fine. You know, it's not a big deal. Don't take yourself so seriously. Just lighten up. Just eat moderately. Like, don't beat yourself up, you know? And I agree with that. Don't beat yourself up. But for people who aren't addicts, for them to say, oh, lighten up, like, you know, I'm like, you don't see what's going on behind the scenes. You don't see the after party, you know? You don't see the tailgating that happens when you all go to sleep. And you don't see me waking up in the food coma the next morning hating myself, wondering, why am I here again? You know, so really to admit, I am powerless, and I have to get that. And if I don't get that, I'll just keep repeating it. But that being said, you know, I don't have to get it all at once. Sometimes I get it, and the longer I'm going to program, the more and the more deeply I get it. Like, I am just broken and need a higher power. And then kind of similar to step one and step two, that's something that people can help you with, and you can look at people as examples of how they've recovered and what God has done in their life. But at some point, you just have to take that step of faith. And it might be as simple and as scary beyond belief as just letting go of the food. To me, nothing is bigger leap of faith than an addict giving up their drug. You know, that is the free fall, like the letting go of my security blanket. Thanks. Like it says, that flimsy reed, you know, that actually turns out to be a loving and powerful hand of God. And then giving it to God. And we do that with, we can do that using the third step prayer with somebody else, as a witness. But just giving it up to God, that letting God take it all. And then the rest of the steps, I mean, the big book talks about, like, we need somebody there. If I think I'm doing a fourth step and all I'm telling is myself, something's wrong. You know, it's not going to work like that. Because, and that's not to say that's bad at all. What I'm saying is, if we want freedom, we have to have somebody to hold our hand, and we tell them the depths of our soul, of things we don't even want to admit, and have them say, all right, you know, all right, what else? You know, like, nobody, you're okay. Even if you, and let me say this too, that, I reached this point where I felt like if God can forgive me, like, in behind the scenes, like the scum of the earth, he can forgive anybody. You know, and if God can love me, he can love anybody. So whatever you've done, and feel like if anybody ever found out, they'd be so, like, I'd be whatever. No, you know, God can forgive it. God can deal with it. God already knows anyway. So who are we kidding? But there's nothing so heinous that God can't bring you back to him, you know? And so that's the message also I want to carry, is in the depths of the self-destruction or the darkness, there's nothing so bad that makes you unlovable by God. Like, you are loved by God no matter what, and you can come back to him. And that's how, like, for us, for me as an addict, that's how I get clean, is through the rest of the steps. You know, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then 8 and 9 is when we kind of move out into the world and start doing it. And getting clean that way. And that, don't do that alone, because you're just going to make it worse. If you try to do it alone, if you try to make amends and you haven't processed it through with somebody before you make amends, just take it from me, thanks. It's a bad idea. or if you do this, I've done this too, that I know this is God's will for me, I'm going to hurry up and go do it before anybody else talks me out of it. Like, let that have alarm bells go off in your head, because not going to work. And then 10, 11, 12, just seeking God's will, and prayer and meditation. We need that time apart, absolutely. And we need that time imparting also. It's a give and a take and a relationship and engagement. But then, you know, practicing these principles in all our affairs. It's when we're with people also, and I think also when nobody's around. I think those are the most telling moments. When nobody's around and I could sneak a little, I mean, that right there is where the rubber meets the road. What am I doing with God? Am I honesty with food? Really the ultimate purpose is to know God, to love God, to know and serve my fellows, you know, and I fall short of that all the time. But I'm grateful to be here and to be in this program, and to be an addict for the most part. There are days too where I'm like, if there was a pill I could pop to not be an addict, sign me up, you know, because who wants to trudge this road? But at the same time, what we really want, if we really want to be a maximum service, what other better way is there than to have to have a spiritual life in order to even survive? For me, having a relationship with God is not optional. You know, it's like I have a relationship with God, or I use my drug and die. You know, it's that black and white for me. So I appreciate being with you guys. It's awesome. And I love the lava lamp. So thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Mandy.
Sorry. I have one more thing.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead. I have one of these two purpose newest. Is there less than 3 months in program? Less than 2 months? Less than 1 month? First meeting? Less than a month? I got lost. I'm confused. Who's the newest?
I think they're pretty new.
Okay, here you go.
All right.
And I hope they can share it.
So I'm going to open up for 10 minutes of sharing before we have our next speaker.
I'm Jan, and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater.
Hey, Jan.
I'd like to discuss the tool of the telephone. I just happened, when Mandy was sharing, I was thinking about Bill Colin Bob. And you know how hard that must have been with the rotary dial. And you know, I can remember when I was a child, it was quite a long time ago, where we had the rotary dial, and if you premature took your finger out, it was the wrong number. And you know, then at least they didn't have 10 digits then. Oh my God, you all day, you know, getting it right. And now I have this fancy iPhone, and I can pick up a phone number by just a touch of my finger off of an email. And just it's just so much easier to call. Sometimes I wonder why, you know, I just don't do it more. But it really is a good tool to stay connected. And I'm really grateful for this fellowship to have really good friends. And what was shared earlier is, you know, my very best friends are in program. And that's, you know, I'm really, really grateful for that. And, you know, my life has just changed so much, is that although, you know, the gifts of the program has kept me very, very busy, and, you know, so many blessings, you know, so many that I can barely keep up with counting them all. But it gets confusing after a while, and I'm really grateful to come here in the calmness and just say, you know what, this part isn't confusing today. But another miracle is I can go and have meet somebody for breakfast that just I don't really didn't know them, but you know they asked me to go, and so I just said, okay, well, if I'm asked to go, I go. And you know, there was just God was present there. You know, I got more marching orders and more things that I'm supposed to be doing. You know, which is really cool, because now I can pay attention and do those things. So anyway, thanks for all that put this together. Oh, and the other thing is, I really hope that Roseanne gets to hear this beautiful song. And maybe you all should take the road to L.A. and it is so professional. So good. Thank you, thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Jim. My name is Amy Funetic. I'm really grateful. Tonight, you guys have got the skin on it. This is like my Christmas gift to me. I don't know about other people, but I get so lost in this holiday. You know, and that's one of the reasons I had to numb out and use food and alcohol is because I really couldn't do life on life's terms. And then when the holidays happen, it's kind of like I get drugged from the TV, from all the lights. What it tells me is that everybody knows what they're doing except me. You know, and it feels like everywhere I look, I can't get away from it. And so to come here and to be quiet and to, I thank you so much, Mandy, for just, I love the how-tos, because I get lost by myself. You know, like, yeah, I've done the steps. Have I? You know, is it true for me today? And laying it out like that gives me a course, especially when it gets confusing. This program really is the day-to-time grace, the self-centeredness and the reality that I came here because of the food, but that I was my biggest problem. You know, it's been real evident these last few days. And I went to a really neat, we actually had a holiday invite some years. That happens sometimes a dozen. And so I was at this place and they had all the right dishes, all the right napkins, all the right food, the Christmas decorate. Nothing looked cheap, you know, that Christmassy stuff that doesn't look like it should be anywhere. And I just left there, had a great time, and just took the jump off the bridge, you know, of like, I don't do this right either, you know. And that was kind of the chapter in every part of my life. And so I come here with people from all different walks of life, and I feel okay. And I can take in that I know that you guys care. And the outside world cares a lot for me, but I can't take it in without the fellowship here, without working the steps, without staying connected, without making the calls, without reading the literature, without doing service. So, you know, every day you guys keep me alive for one more day. And so I'm really grateful. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
I'm Shayna, foodetic and bulimic.
Hi, Shayna.
And I'm really grateful to be here tonight, and I just want to thank everyone who put this on. Thank you, Virginia, Tom, Amy, anyone else who put this on, just because I know it takes a lot of work to be of service. It takes work, and it's like I've done quite a bit of service work last year, and it really, really strengthens your program so much. And so I guess that's kind of my telling myself I need to, you know, do something. But also just showing up at a meeting sometimes is just enough service, you know? It's just being available. And I've been abstinent now a little over a year, and I'm so grateful for every day. And also, I have to say, I've been coming to programs since 05, so it took me, you know, what, 5 years to get abstinent and coming here. And I did the steps, and I got involved with fellowship, and I did all this stuff. But I think what really changed for me was when the sponsor I had, she was like, why do you want to be abstinent? Why do you want to stop throwing up? And it was because I wanted to appear to have all my shit together finally, you know? It wasn't to help other people. It wasn't to be of service. It wasn't to help people with my experience. And I think things started to change for me when it became about other people. And it says in the big book, that is our purpose, is to be of service to God and to the people about us. And I didn't really want that. You know, I wanted the new car, the nice house, the thin body, you know, those things a lot more. And I have to say that little by little, coming over years after year after year after year, it changes a little bit. And I haven't been coming to as many meetings, and I feel it. I really can feel that the selfishness just creeping in different ways more, the panic of, you know, what about me, you know? And it's just so old. It gets so old and so sick of it, and I think I'm just so grateful that I have a plan. I know what else I can do. You know, I know how to get out of it. I know that I don't have to stay this way, because I just, my idea of getting out of thinking about me was just thinking about me more, you know? And thinking about somebody else, that it just never absolutely ever occurred to me. So I love that I can come to meetings too and get out of the denial of my selfishness. You know, it's like, no, I'm not selfish. I think about other people all the time. It's just, you know, this area or that area. So I'm really just, I'm just so grateful to have program. And I took today off of work, so it was my birthday last week, and this is my birthday present to myself, because I'm worth it, you know. And I had a girlfriend that would always say, you're worth it, we're worth this. And I never understood what that, what it meant, but I'm starting to now, that, you know, all this work, all this time, you know, it's, I'm worth it, you know, I'm worth being a better person, I'm worth getting to know who I really am. So with that, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to ask Pat, our third speaker, to share. And I just have to say, I know Pat's, I've known her for at least 11 years, and it's just, her story is really wonderful, and she can share about somebody she knows that's sitting next to her when she came into program. And I also just have to say that, and she will probably share this, that when she first came in the first year, she hardly spoke. And she was very quiet, kind of like a little mouse in the corner. And now, I always tease her, you can't get her to shut up. But her, talk about a psychic change and a total change in a person and a personality. It was just incredible. And so all three speakers have been fabulous today, and I'm glad to have known them for over 10 years. And take it away, Pat.
Hi, I'm Pat. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Pat.
Yeah. I want to start out with, when I, all I could think about is way back when I was first a compulsive overeater. I must have been like 5 years old, and I've been a compulsive overeater all my life. And I was always the fat kid at school, and a lot of things, like I was a latchkey kid. I always had to come home after school, and I'd come home, and my two best friends were there, the TV and the food. And that was, it was just a life that, I never had, like, big plans or major things in my life or dreams or anything like that, because, you know, it was just, food was my main life, you know? And, you know, of course, because I was the fat kid, everybody always made fun of me, and I didn't really have a lot of friends. I did have a few, but not a lot, and it was just, it was amazing. sorry, guys, this is, well, I brought my pictures of when I came into program and before, and just because of this program, my whole life has just totally changed. And like Virginia said, when I came into program, I would not speak, okay? It was horrible. I couldn't handle one person or more looking at me for me to talk. It was just the most embarrassing thing. And my sister, she had come for a year to program, and she was actually getting recovery. And it's like, oh, my God, you know? It was so cool. I just thought that was the most amazing thing. You know how they say genetics, you know, so you're fat, so everybody's fat. And basically, all the females in our family were overweight, and my sister was coming to program, and she was losing weight, and it was just so amazing. And it's like, well, that never happened for me. And then she said, come with me to program, you know. And I said, all right, you know, because I was at the point where it did not matter. It did not matter. I could not stay out of the food no matter what. I would literally wake up in the morning, and I wouldn't eat breakfast because that was wasted calories, of course, you know. But then I'd go to work, and they would have, you know, things all over the place. I would sneak food constantly all day long, and then I would go home and eat from the minute that I got home to when I went to bed. And then on the weekends, of course, from when I got up to when I went to bed. And I literally was so bad into the food. And I did go on diets, and diets were just amazing thing to me. I don't know how I did it, but all of a sudden I would get on a diet, and it would be so great. And one time I even was on a diet for a whole year. I lost 80 pounds. I was just elated. And now I figured, okay, I'm just like everybody else. I can eat anything I want. And in within a few months, I gained 90 pounds. Mm-hmm. And it was just amazing. And I always remember my favorite diet was the low-fat diet. So you could have a bunch of stuff with sugar in it as long as you stayed under the fat thing, because they were making, you know, low-fat things. But then I got tired of that, and then I'd get back into the fat things again. And so yeah, I did lose 20 pounds doing that, though, too. But it was just like that my whole life, and I went 39 years like that. And when my sister said, come with me to these rooms, I came in these rooms. And I go to the Big Book study on Monday nights, and when I found out I had to read in front of people, I about died. It was just so embarrassing. It's like, oh, my God. And I remember, like, the third meeting, my sister couldn't come, and she called me. She goes, I'm not coming tonight, so you'll have to go on your own. So I started to come. I got to the parking lot. I sat out in that parking lot, and I left. It's like, I'm not going in there by myself. And I had already come to a few meetings, but that's how bad life was for me. And my whole life was basically, I would wake up in the morning, especially Monday morning, shaking because I was just nervous about everything. Everything would make me nervous. It was horrible. I'd be nervous about the bills. I'd be nervous about work. I'd be nervous about getting things right and everything else. But it always was right, and everything always worked out. You know, but it was just horrible. And so when I came in these rooms, I found out I had an addiction. That's one thing I did not know. I never knew that. I always felt like I had such low self-esteem myself. It was just, I was a loser. I couldn't do it. Everybody else could do it. I even remember telling somebody, I can't stop compulsively overeating. It was a normal person, of course. And they said, what do you mean you can't stop eating? You just stop. And it's like, okay, sure. You know, and I could not do it. But coming in these rooms, I found out I had an addiction. And it's like, oh, my God, you know. I never thought that, you know. You know, food can't be an addiction. It's something you have to eat every day. You know, how can it be an addiction? And mine is sugar. Mine is very much sugar. And when I came to these rooms, and just like they were saying, the fellowship, and just I put my hand in yours, and thank God for listening to what everybody had to say, listening to other people's journeys, listening to, you know, learning, my God, you know, okay, they were giving up sugar. And then I was so jealous because I couldn't do it for like 3 months. I come in these rooms, I couldn't do it. It's like, how in the world can they give up sugar? It's like, no way. There's no way. I can't do that the rest of my life. What are they talking about? So I came in October of 2000. And I tried, you know, but it was just such a failure. And I would cry when I come in the meetings because I couldn't do it. Finally, I decided January 1st, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try to give it up, okay? So I did it. I did it for a whole week. I was just so elated. And I gained 2 whole pounds and was like, oh, great, okay. So at that time, I was up to like 236 pounds. And it was like, oh, my God, you know. But it was just felt like a million pounds were taken off my shoulders because I wasn't chained to that food anymore. I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, and I did it so unconsciously. It was just amazing. I literally sometimes would go back and check to see if I ate something. And, of course, if I didn't, I'd eat it. But it was just amazing, you know, I, you know, how I ate. So I had to teach myself how to eat all over again, how to eat, you know, like normal things. And my thing is I do my 3 meals a day with nothing in between, and I stay out of the sugar, and I can't have any gray areas. I can't say, okay, I can do a little of this or a little of that, and I can't snack in between my meals and that kind of stuff. And I know, and what's kind of nice is I know what I have to do, and what's kind of nice is I could probably tell you what I'm going to eat all week, you know, all the way down the road. I could tell you, and I'm very, very regimented, basically, with my breakfast and my lunch. And my dinners kind of change, you know, every night because it's me and my husband, so those change. But, you know, it's like I'm in a secure spot. I feel secure because it's not like, oh, I can't go into any gray areas or anything, so I'm secure and I feel pretty good. And, you know, when we do things at work, we have potlucks and stuff, and I know ahead of time, and I already know, okay. And it's funny, some people at work, Well, I just tell them because, I don't know, I just tell them I don't eat sugar, you know, and people go, oh, okay. And then they ask me, are you diabetic or something? You know, and I say, no, I just can't eat sugar, you know, and I leave it at that, you know, and I don't go into it too much or too detailed usually, you know. And then people I, you know, my friends and stuff, I do tell them. I tell them I'm an overeater and I go to OA, and a lot of them are pretty much amazed. And it's just been such an amazing journey. It took me a while to lose the weight, you know. Took me way over a year to lose the weight, and I lost 90 pounds, and it's just because of this program. I, you know, it's something, and that was in 2002. So this year here, I would have kept the weight off for 10 years, which is just, that's, you know, that's just, that's amazing to me, because I could never keep it off more than a couple months if I could even do that. And it's all because of this program. It's for, like, the fellowship. It's for everybody that comes to these meetings. It's just everything I learn, every day I learn. And things like, my higher power before used to be somebody that if I wasn't a good person, he was going to strike me dead, you know, kind of thing, you know. And I didn't have a good relationship with my higher power. And when I came in these rooms, I finally got a good relationship with my higher power. So my thing is, every day I get up, I say my gratitude list. I do a gratitude list every day, and I thank God for everything. And it just makes my day so well. And the days I forget to do my gratitude list, my day just goes so bad. And then it's like, in the middle, it's like, why am I having such a bad day? Oh, I forgot to do my gratitude list today. And things like that, where I would have never done anything like it before. And I've gotten a lot of confidence in myself. I ended up getting a job, which I would have never, ever even tried to get in my life, just because of the way I felt about myself, you know. Nothing's changed, you know. In fact, it's funny, I still live in the same house. I still have the same husband, same kids. the only thing is, you know, I got more confidence, so I went for, like, you know, I went for a better job, which, you know, it's just amazing. I really enjoy it. And my job now, I feel like I help people, and we all help people out there, and it's just a nicer job, and I feel like I'm accomplishing something, where before it was just a job, you know. Now it's something I feel like maybe I can make a difference. And just things like that, this program just amazing, because I just remember when, just before I came in these rooms, my youngest son, he had just graduated from high school. He decided to move to North Carolina. He was 18, and it was like, God, it was just heartbreaking. And all I could think about, well, okay, both my kids, they're out of high school and stuff. I could just die now because I have nothing to live for. And, you know, come to find out, you know, they need me now to this day. You know, it doesn't matter how old your kids get. They always need you, just in different aspects. And, and my husband and I have a great relationship. And we have dreams now. We have goals. We have things like that, which are just so amazing. You know, getting into our older years now, we have these goals and stuff, and we're trying to meet them. And it's just amazing, and it's something to work for, and it's just something to live for. And I never had that before I came to these rooms, which is just so amazing. I just love this program, and it gave me a life back, because I did not have one. And I just hope I can help somebody else. I hope I give somebody some inspiration so that they just keep coming back and just keep trying. If you're struggling with the food and stuff, because, like I said, I just didn't think I could do it, man. I tried it for a day, and I made it the day, and I was just, you know, just so elated. I made it a whole day without being into the food. And then when I made it a whole week, it was like, wow, you know. And then, you know, as you go on, you do have, you know, little struggles and stuff, you know, where your food may not be 100% perfect. But that's what's great about this program. It's not perfection. It is... you just have to work on it every day. And, you know, it's just like falling off a horse. If you fall, if you have to get back on, you can't just say, oh, I'm not, we're going to ride a horse again. You have to do it again. And you just have to keep going. it's not like a diet. Can't treat it like a diet. It's a life change, and it's the best life change I've ever done. That's all I have. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Okay, we have about 5 minutes of sharing. And, you know, and then we're going to have the song again and a reading, the reading and then the song again, and candles that we're going to hold. So we have about 5 minutes of sharing for two or three people that want to share.
My name's Chris. I'm a compulsive overeater and sugar addict.
Hi, Chris.
And I think it was in this room at a Monday night meeting about 4 years ago that I heard some of the speakers talk about being able to let go of sugar, and that made me realize that I could let go of sugar as well. And it's really grateful for this program. And I've been coming to the candlelight meeting since I first started in November 4 years ago, because I love candlelight. And so I really appreciate being here. Thanks, Chris.
My name is Arun. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
I really don't know what to say, and I know for me, I'm relatively new to OA. I've only been going to meetings for a couple of months, and I want to spout off all this recovery and all this knowledge, say something really profound. But I'm a compulsive overeater, and I've been a compulsive overeater for 30 years, and I'm just starting to see it. And I'm just grateful for this opportunity to be here. Thanks.
Thanks.
I'm Doug. I'm compulsive overeater.
Hi, Doug.
Monday night, 6:30 at Grace United Methodist Church, 4901 East Yale. There's a men's meeting at 6:30.
Thanks, Doug.
Hi, I'm Ace, and I'm a bulimic and a food addict.
Hi, Ace.
Marsh is STEM. I was just thinking about how for such a long time, for, you know, years in the food, I didn't sing at all, and I used to sing all the time, and it's only, I feel pretty new to program, and I'm just starting to really get some abstinence, and this is the first time I've sung in a really, really, really long time, mm-hmm. And I just want to say I'm really grateful to have this program and to feel, you know, safe enough in this room to sing. And, you know, to not be in the food right now, which would be the, I mean, if this wasn't here, that would be where I would be, so. Thank God. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks.
My name is Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. And I would just like to thank you guys very much for having this program here for me. I grew up as a kid, fat, not good enough, and I was taught that I couldn't sing, that I didn't have a good voice, and you know, all kinds of things like that. And it's because of this program and you people that I've learned that some of the things they told me were wrong. And I can do things. I used to be so scared to sing that if I tried to sing in front of people, my throat would just completely clench up. And being able to relax enough to get words out is really 100% because of the program for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, before we close, I've asked JT to read something.
Hi, JT, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, JT.
If you remove your body from the truth, when you are ready, the truth is nowhere to be found. But if you continue to bring your body to the truth, then when you are ready, the truth is waiting there for you. And the truth, our promise of recovery, is in every OA meeting when we join hands, pray together, and joyously, lovingly encourage one another. Keep coming back.
Thank you.
Thanks, JT.
We will now prepare for our closing.